Chapter 2, Reality and Personal Dreams, The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts. Chapter 2, Session 614, September 13, 1972. Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth, we will resume dictation. Chapter 2, Reality and Personal Beliefs. You form the fabric of your experience through your own beliefs and expectations. These personal ideas about yourself and the nature of reality will affect your thoughts and emotions. You take your beliefs about reality as truth and often do not question them. They seem self-explanatory. They appear in your mind as statements of fact, far too obvious for examination. Therefore, they are accepted without question too often. They are not recognized as beliefs about reality, but are instead considered characteristics of reality itself. Frequently, such ideas appear indisputable, so a part of you that it does not occur to you to speculate about their validity. They become invisible assumptions, but they nevertheless color and form your personal experience. Some people, for example, do not question their religious beliefs but accept them as fact. Others find it comparatively easy to recognize such inner assumptions when they appear in a religious context, but are quite blind to them in other areas. It is far simpler to recognize your own beliefs in regard to religion, politics, or similar subjects than it is to pinpoint your deepest beliefs about yourself and who and what you are, particularly in relationship with your own life. Many individuals are completely blind to their own beliefs about themselves and the nature of reality. Your own conscious thoughts will give you excellent clues. Often you will find yourself refusing to accept certain thoughts that come to your mind because they conflict with other usually accepted ideas. Your conscious mind is always trying to give you a clear picture, but you often allow preconceived ideas to block out this intelligence. It has been fashionable to blame the subconscious for personality problems and difficulties, the idea being that early events, charged and mysterious, lodged there. In this country, several generations grew up believing that the subconscious portions of the personality were unreliable, filled with negative energy, and contained only locked up, unpleasant episodes best forgotten. They grew up believing that the conscious mind was relatively powerless, that adult experience was set in the days of infancy. These concepts themselves set up artificial divisions. People learned that they should not be aware of subconscious material. The doors to the inner self were to be shut tight. Only lengthy psychoanalysis could or should open them. The normal individual felt that he had best leave such areas alone. So in cutting off these portions of the self, barriers were also set up against the joy of the inner spontaneous self. People felt divorced from the core of their own reality. The concept of original sin was a very poor, limited, and distorted one, but at least along with it went rather simple procedures. Through baptism, you might be saved, or through certain words, or sacraments, or rituals, redemption could be found. See the Gospel according to Mark 1, verse 1 through 11, for instance. The idea of the tainted subconscious, however, left men no such relatively easy way out. The few rituals possible required years of analysis, which only the very wealthy were privileged to experience. About the same time that the idea of the unsavory subconscious arose so strongly, the idea of the soul went out the window. Millions of people therefore believed in a reality in which they were deprived of the idea of a soul and burdened by the concept of a very unreliable, if not definitely evil, subconscious. They saw themselves as vulnerable, solitary points of egos, riding perilously and unprotected upon the tumultuous waves of involuntary processes. Rob notes pause at 10:05. Certainly these sessions aren't spiritual in usual terms. Still, in trance, Jane lit a cigarette. Her beer was gone, but since I had a little left in my glass, she reached over and helped herself. Rob notes, Jane learned on her own some time ago that a very moderate amount of alcohol goes well with the sessions. So does tobacco. Subsequent reading informed us that both substances depress the central nervous system. We think Jane combines the resulting spontaneity with her natural psychic abilities in these sessions. She doesn't begin tasting any beverage, however, until the session is underway. Seth, at about the same time, many intelligent persons were realizing that organized religion's ideas of God and of heaven and hell were distorted, unjust, and smacked of children's fairy tales. For these individuals, there was no place to look for help. Under the circumstances, to look within would have seemed foolhardy, for they had been taught that this within contained the source of their problems to begin with. Those who could not afford the therapy tried the harder to inhibit any messages from the inner self, for fear they would become swallowed by the savage, infantile emotions. Now, first of all, there are no limitations or divisions to the self. Though for purposes of discussion, a word like ego may be used here because you understand what you think it means. You can indeed depend upon seemingly unconscious portions of yourself. As you will see later, you can become more and more consciously aware. Therefore, bringing into your consciousness larger and larger portions of yourself. You breathe, grow, and perform multitudinous delicate and precise activities constantly, without being consciously aware of how you carry out such manipulations. You live without consciously knowing how you maintain this miracle of physical awareness in the world of flesh and time. The seemingly unconscious portions of yourself draw atoms and molecules from the air to form your image. Your lips move, your tongue speaks your name. Does the name belong to the atoms and molecules within your lips or tongue? The atoms and molecules move constantly, forming into cells, tissues, and organs. How can the name the tongue speaks belong to them? They do not read or write, yet they speak complicated syllables that communicate to other beings, such as yourself, anything from a simple feeling to the most complicated information. How do they do this? The atoms and molecules of the tongue do not know the syntax of the language they speak. When you begin a sentence, you do not have the slightest conscious idea, often, of how you will finish it. Yet you take it on faith that the words will make sense and your meaning will flow out effortlessly. All of this happens because the inner portions of your being operate spontaneously, joyfully, freely. All of this occurs because your inner self believes in you, often even while you do not believe in it. These unconscious portions of your being operate amazingly well, frequently despite the greatest misunderstandings on your part of their nature and function, and in the face of strong interference from you because of your beliefs. Each person experiences a unique reality, different from any other individual's. This reality springs outward from the inner landscape of thoughts, feelings, expectations, and beliefs. If you believe that the inner self works against you rather than for you, then you hamper its functioning, or rather you force it to behave in a certain way because of your beliefs. The conscious mind is meant to make clear judgments about your position in physical reality. Often, false beliefs will prevent it from making these, for the egotistically held ideas will cloud its clear vision. I suggest a break. Rob notes, 10:31. Jane's trance had been deep. She felt better now, she said, because the weather had lost some of its oppressive quality. I told her that, in my opinion, the material tonight represented her and Seth at their best, and that it also had a deceptive simplicity. Jane was pleased. saying she felt quite free now about the production of the book. Seth, are you ready? Rob, yes. I was just finishing my notes when Jane took off her glasses and resumed speaking for Seth. 10:53. Seth, your ideas can be like fences that surround you. You must first recognize the existence of such barriers. You must see them, or you will not even realize that you are not free, simply because you will not see beyond the fences. They will represent the boundaries of your experience. There is one belief, however, that destroys artificial barriers to perception, an expanding belief that automatically pierces false and inhibiting ideas. Now separately, the self is not limited. This statement is a statement of fact. It exists regardless of your belief or disbelief in it. Following this concept is another. There are no boundaries or separations of the self. Those that you experience are the result of false beliefs. Following this is the idea that I have already mentioned. You make your own reality. To understand yourself and what you are, you can learn to experience yourself directly apart from your beliefs about yourself. What I would like each reader to do is to sit quietly, close your eyes, try to sense within yourself the deep feeling tones that I mentioned earlier. Rob notes in the 613th session in Chapter 1. Seth continues, this is not difficult to do. Seth, your knowledge of their existence will help you recognize their deep rhythms within you. Each individual will sense these tones in his or her own way, so do not worry about how they should feel. Simply tell yourself that they exist, that they are composed of the great energies of your being made flesh. Let yourself experience. If you are used to terms like meditation, try to forget the term during this procedure. Do not use any name. Free yourself from concepts and experience the being of yourself and the motion of your own vitality. Do not question, is this right? Am I doing it correctly? Am I feeling what I should feel? This is the book's first exercise for you. You are not to use other people's criteria. There are no standards but your own feelings. No particular time limit is recommended. This should be an enjoyable experience. Accept whatever happens as uniquely your own. The exercise will put you in touch with yourself. It will return you to yourself. Whenever you are nervous or upset, take a few moments to sense this feeling tone within you, and you will find yourself centered in your own being, secure. When you have tried this exercise several times, then feel these deep rhythms go out from you in all directions, as indeed they do. Electromagnetically, they radiate out through your physical being, and in ways that I hope to explain later, they form the environment that you know, even as they form your physical image. I told you that the self was not limited, yet surely you think that yourself stops where your skin meets space, that you are inside your skin, period. Yet your environment is an extension of yourself. It is the body of your experience, coalesced in physical form. The inner self forms the objects that you know as surely and automatically as it forms your finger or your eye. Your environment is the physical picture of your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs made visible. Since your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs move through space and time, you therefore affect physical conditions separate from you. Consider the spectacular framework of your body just from the physical viewpoint. You perceive it as solid, as you perceive all other physical matter. Yet the more matter is explored, the more obvious it becomes that within it, energy takes on specific shape in the form of organs, cells, molecules, atoms, electrons, each less physical than the last, each combining in mysterious gestalt to form matter. The atoms within your body spin, There is constant commotion and activity. The flesh that seems so solid turns out to be composed of swiftly moving particles, often orbiting each other, in which great exchanges of energy continually occur. The stuff, the space outside your body, is composed of the same elements, but in different proportions. There is a constant physical interchange between the structure you call your body and the space outside it. Chemical interactions, basic exchanges without which life as you know it would be impossible. To hold your breath is to die. Breath, which represents the most intimate and most necessary of your physical sensations, must flow out from what you are, passing into the world that seems to be not you. Physically, portions of you leave your body constantly and intermix with the elements. You know what happens when adrenaline is released through the bloodstream. It stirs you up and prepares you for action. But in other ways, the adrenaline does not just stay in your body. It is cast into the air, and it affects the atmosphere, though it is transformed. Any of your emotions liberate hormones. But these also leave you as your breath leaves you, and in that respect, you can say that you release chemicals into the air that then affect it. Physical storms, then, are caused by such interactions. I am telling you that you form your own reality once again, and this includes the physical weather, which is the result, in mass, of your individual reactions. I will elaborate much more specifically on this particular point later in the book. Rob notes, a note added later, Seth does in chapter 18. Seth, you are in physical existence to learn and understand that your energy, translated into feelings, thoughts, and emotions, causes all experience. There are no exceptions. Once you understand this, you have only to learn to examine the nature of your beliefs, for these will automatically cause you to feel and think in certain fashions. Your emotions follow your beliefs. It is not the other way around. I would like you to recognize your own beliefs in several areas. You must realize that any idea you accept as truth is a belief that you hold. You must, then, take the next step and say, it is not necessarily true, even though I believe it. You will, I hope, learn to discard all beliefs that imply basic limitations. You may take your break. Rob notes, break 11:40. Jane was surprised to learn that almost 50 minutes had passed. Her delivery had become increasingly energetic and intent, and the session had turned into one of those occasions when she and Seth appeared to be quite capable of continuing half the night. I'd also picked up an infusion of energy. Because I was willing to continue, Jane changed her mind about ending the session here. Resume in the same manner at 11:56. Seth, now later we will discuss some of the reasons for your beliefs, but for now, I simply want you to recognize them. I am going to list some limiting false beliefs. If you find yourself agreeing with any of them, then recognize this is an area in which you must personally work. Belief 1. Life is a valley of sorrows. 2. The body is inferior. As a vehicle of the soul, it is automatically degraded, tinged. You may feel that the flesh is inherently bad or evil, that its appetites are wrong. Christians may find the body deplorable, thinking that the soul descended into it, descent, automatically meaning the change from a higher or better condition to one that is worse. Followers of Eastern religions often feel it their duty also to deny the flesh, to rise above it, so to speak, into a state where nothing is desired. Rob notes emptiness in Taoism, for instance. Seth continues, using a different vocabulary, they still believe that earth experience is not desirable in itself. 3. I am helpless before circumstances that I cannot control. 4. I am helpless because my personality and character were formed in infancy, and I am at the mercy of my past. 5. I am helpless because I am at the mercy of events from many past lives in other incarnations over which I now have no control. I must be punished, or I am punishing myself for unkindness done to others in past lives. I must accept the negative aspects of my life because of my karma. 6. People are basically bad and out to get me. 7. I have the truth and no one else has, or my group has the truth and no other group has. 8. I will grow frailer, sicker, and lose my powers as I grow old. 9. My existence is dependent upon my experience in flesh. When my body dies, my consciousness dies with it. Now, that was a rather general list of false beliefs. Now, here is a more specific list of more intimate beliefs, any of which you may have personally about yourself. 1. I am sickly and have always been. 2. There is something wrong with money. People who have it are greedy, less spiritual than those who are poor. They are unhappier and snobs. 3. I am not creative. I have no imagination. Next, I can never do what I want to do. Next, people dislike me. Next, I am fat. Rob notes, what would be number 6? Seth, then 7. I always have bad luck. These are all beliefs held by many people. Those who have them will meet them in experience. Physical data will always seem to reinforce the beliefs, therefore, but the beliefs formed the reality. We are going to attempt to knock down some limiting concepts. First of all, you must realize that no one can change your beliefs for you, nor can they be forced upon you from without. You can indeed change them for yourself, however, with knowledge and application. Look about you. Your entire physical environment is the materialization of your beliefs. Your sense of joy, sorrow, health, or illness, all of these are also caused by your beliefs. If you believe that a given situation should make you unhappy, then it will. And the unhappiness will then reinforce the condition. Within you is the ability to change your ideas about reality and about yourself, to create a personal living experience that is fulfilling to yourself and others. I would like you to write down your beliefs about yourself as you become aware of them. Later you can use this list in a way that you do not now suspect. Break or end of session, whatever you prefer. Rob, well, I guess we better end it then. End at 12:25. Both of us felt much better now than we had before the session began. Session 615, September 18, 1972, continuing Chapter 2. Jane has already had one session, a short one, today. The mail had brought us good news early this afternoon. We'd celebrated with the drink. Then Seth had come through. While we were eating supper this evening, Jane received a long-distance call from one of our visitors of last August. Regretfully, she had to tell him she'd had little time to work on the specific projects discussed then, although she was still interested. While she was doing the dishes and thinking about this, she received an amusing flash from Seth. She was to stop worrying about such things and adopt a position of divine nonchalance. Jane was quite ready for her regular session at 9, although because of the call, we weren't sure what it would cover. By 9:30, however, the session still hadn't started, and she was impatient. Yet, when she did take off her glasses and began speaking for Seth, her voice was quiet, her pace leisurely, her eyes closed often. Seth, now dictation. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, your conscious beliefs direct the functioning of your body. It is not the other way around. Your inner self adopts the physical conscious, physically focused mind as a method of allowing it to manipulate in the world that you know. The conscious mind is particularly equipped to direct outward activity, to handle waking experience, and to oversee physical work. Its beliefs about the nature of reality are then given to inner portions of the self. These rely mainly upon the conscious mind's interpretation of temporal reality. The conscious mind sets the goals and the inner self brings them about, using all its faculties and inexhaustible energy. The great value of the conscious mind lies precisely in its ability to make decisions and set directions. Its role is dual, however. It is meant to assess conditions both inside and outside, to handle data that comes from the physical world and from the inner portions of the self. It is not a closed system, then. To be human necessitates fine discrimination in the use of such consciousness. Many people are afraid of their own thoughts. They do not examine them. They accept the beliefs of others. Such actions distort data from both within and without. There is no battle between the intuitive self and the conscious mind. There only seems to be when the individual refuses to face all the information that is available in his conscious mind. Sometimes it's easier to avoid the frequent readjustments in behavior that self-examination requires. In such cases, an individual collects many second-hand beliefs. Some contradict each other. The signals given to the body and to the inner self are not smoothly flowing or clear-cut, but a muddied jumble of counter-directions. These will immediately set off alarms of various natures. The body will not function properly, or the overall emotional environment will suffer. Such reactions are actually excellent precautions, meant to be taken as a sign that change is needed. At the same time, the inner self will transmit to the conscious mind insights and intuitions meant to clear its sight. But if you believe that the inner self is dangerous and not to be trusted, if you are afraid of dreams or any intrusive psychic material, then you deny this help and turn aside from it. If you believe, moreover, that you must accept your difficulties, then this belief alone can deter you from solving them. I repeat, your ideas and beliefs form the structure of your experience. Your beliefs and the reasons for them can be found in your conscious mind. If you accept the idea that the reasons for your belief are forever buried in the past of this life or any other, then you will not be able to alter your experience until you change that belief. I am speaking now of more or less normal experience. Later we will discuss more particular areas, such as circumstances in which illnesses date from birth. The realization that you form your own reality should be a liberating one. You are responsible for your successes and your joys. You can change those areas of your life with which you are less than pleased. But you must take the responsibility for your being. Your spirit joined itself with flesh, and in flesh, to experience a world of incredible richness, to help create a dimension of reality, of colors, and of form. Your spirit was born in flesh to experience a marvelous area of sense awareness, to feel energy made into corporal form. You are here to use, enjoy, and express yourself through the body. You are here to aid in the great expansion of consciousness. You are not here to cry about the miseries of the human condition, but to change them when you find them not to your liking, through the joy, strength, and vitality that is within you, to create the spirit as faithfully and beautifully as you can in flesh. The conscious mind allows you to look outward into the physical universe and see the reflection of your spiritual activity to perceive and assess your individual and joint creations. In a manner of speaking, the conscious mind is a window through which you look outward, and looking outward, perceive the fruits of your inner mind. Often you let false beliefs blur that great vision. Your joy, vitality, and accomplishment do not come from the outside to you as the result of events that happen to you. They spring from inner events that are the result of your beliefs. Much has been written about the nature and importance of suggestion. One of the current ideas in vogue holds that you are constantly at the mercy of suggestion. Your own conscious beliefs are the most important suggestions that you receive. All other ideas are rejected or accepted according to whether or not you believe they are true, in line with the steady conscious chattering that goes on within your mind most of the day, the suggestions given to you by yourself. You will accept a suggestion given by another only if it fits in with your own ideas about the nature of reality in general and your concepts about yourself in particular. If you use your conscious mind properly, then, you examine those beliefs that come to you. You do not accept them willy-nilly. If you use your conscious mind properly, you are also aware of intuitive ideas that come to you from within. You are only half-conscious when you do not examine the information that comes to you from without, and when you ignore the data that comes to you from within. Many false beliefs, therefore, are indiscriminately accepted because you have not examined them. You have given the inner self a faulty picture of reality. Since it is the function of the conscious mind to assess physical experience, it, the inner self, hasn't been able to do its job properly. If the inner portions of the self were supposed to have that responsibility, then you would not need a conscious mind. Emphatically, when the inner self is alerted, it will immediately try to remedy the situation by an influx of self-corrective measures. On occasion, when the situation gets out of hand, it will bypass those restrictive areas of the conscious mind and solve the problem by shooting forth energy in other layers of activity. It will manage to work around the blind spots in the reasoning mind, for example. Often it will sift out from the barrage of conflicting beliefs the particular set that is most life-giving and send these forth in what then appears as bursts of revelation. Such revelations result in new patterns that change behavior. You must be aware of the contents of your own reasoning mind. Find the ambiguities. Regardless of the nature of your beliefs, they are indeed made flesh and material. The miracle of your being cannot escape itself. Your thoughts blossom into events. If you think the world is evil, you will meet with events that seem evil. There are no accidents in cosmic terms, or in terms of the world as you know it. Your beliefs grow as surely in time and space as flowers do. When you realize this, you can feel their growing. You may take a break. Rob Notes, break from 10:29 to 10:44. Seth, now resume dictation. The conscious mind is basically curious, open. It is also equipped to examine its own contents. Because of the psychological theories of the last century, many Western people believe that the primary purpose of the conscious mind is to inhibit unconscious material. Instead, as mentioned in this session, it is also meant to receive and interpret important data that comes to it from the inner self. Left alone, it does this very well. It receives and interprets impressions. What has happened, however, is that man has taught it to accept only data coming from the outside world and to set up barriers against inner knowledge. Such a situation denies the individual his full strength and cuts him off consciously now from the important sources of his being. These conditions inhibit creative expression in particular and deny the conscious self the continuity emerging insights and intuitions otherwise available. Thought and feeling then seem separate. Creativity and intellect do not show themselves as the brothers that they are, but often as strangers. The conscious mind loses its fine edge. It cuts out from its experience the vast body of inner knowledge available to it. Divisions, illusionary ones, appear in the self. Left alone, the self acts spontaneously as a unit, but as an ever-changing one, listening to voices both within and without. The conscious mind is able to form beliefs that are in league with the self's knowledge as received from material and non-material sources. Then examination of beliefs takes its place along with other activities, naturally, easily, without effort. Once the conscious mind has accepted a collection of conflicting beliefs, however, a definite attempt is necessary to sort these out. Remember, even false beliefs will seem to be justified in terms of physical data, since your experience in the outside world is the materialization of those beliefs. So you must work with the raw material of your ideas, even while your sense data may tell you that a given belief is obviously a truth. To change your experience or any portion of it, then, you must change your ideas. Since you have been forming your own reality all along, the results will follow naturally. You must be convinced that you can alter your beliefs. You must be willing to try. Think of a limiting idea as a muddy color, and your life as a multidimensional painting that is marred. You change the idea as an artist would his palette. The artist does not identify with the colors he uses. He knows he chooses them and applies them with a brush. So you paint your reality with your ideas in the same manner. You are not your ideas, not even your thoughts. You are the self who experiences them. If a painter finds his hand stained with pigment at the end of a day, he can wash the stain off easily, knowing its nature. If you think that limiting thoughts are a portion of you, permanently attached, therefore, you will not think of washing them off. You would behave instead like a mad artist who says, "My paints are a part of me. They have stained my fingers, and there is nothing I can do about it." There is no contradiction, though there may seem to be, between spontaneously being aware of your thoughts and examining them. You do not have to be blind to be spontaneous. You are not being spontaneous when you indiscriminately accept as your own, for a fact, every bit of data that comes to you. Many beliefs would automatically fall away quite harmlessly if you were being truly spontaneous. Instead, you often harbor them. Previous limiting ideas accepted figuratively form a restraining bed, gathering other such materials so that your mind becomes filled with debris. When you are spontaneous, you accept the free nature of your mind, and it spontaneously makes decisions as to the validity or non-validity of data it receives. When you refuse to allow it this function, it becomes cluttered. No apple tree tries to grow violets. Quite automatically, it knows what it is and the framework of its own identity and existence. You have a conscious mind, but this is only the topmost portion of your mind. Much more of it is available to you. Much more of your knowledge can be conscious, therefore. But a false belief, a limiting one, is as ambiguous to your nature as any apple tree's idea that it was a violet plant. It could not produce violets, nor could it be a good apple tree while it tried to. The mistaken belief is one that does not fit the basic conditions of your inner being. So if you believe that you are at the mercy of physical events, you entertain a false belief. If you feel that your present experience was set out in circumstances beyond your control, you entertain a false belief. You had a hand in the development of your childhood environment. You chose the circumstances. This does not mean that you are at the mercy of those circumstances. It means that you set challenges to be overcome, set goals to be reached, set up frameworks of experience through which you could develop, understand, and fulfill certain abilities. The creative power to form your own experience is within you now, as it has been since the time of your birth and before. You may have chosen the particular theme for this existence, a certain framework of conditions, but within these you have the freedom to experiment, create, and alter conditions and events. Each person chooses for himself the individual patterns within which he will create his personal reality. But inside these bounds are infinite varieties of actions and unlimited resources. The inner self is embarked upon an exciting endeavor in which it learns how to translate its reality into physical terms. The conscious mind is brilliantly attuned to physical reality then, and often so dazzled by what it perceives that it is tempted to think physical phenomena is a cause rather than a result. Deeper portions of the self always serve to remind it that this is not the case. When the conscious mind accepts too many false beliefs, particularly if it sees the inner self as a danger, then it closes out these constant reminders. When this situation arises, the conscious mind feels itself assailed by a reality that seems greater than itself, over which it has no control. The deep feeling of security in which it should be anchored is lost. The false beliefs must be weeded out so that the conscious mind can become aware of its source once again and open to the inner channels of splendor and power available to it. The ego is an offshoot of the conscious mind, so to speak. The conscious mind is like a gigantic camera, with the ego directing the view and the focus. Left alone, various portions of the identity rise and form the ego, degroup and reform, all the while maintaining a marvelous spontaneity and yet a sense of oneness. The ego is your idea of your physical image in relation to the world. Your self-image is not unconscious then. You are quite aware of it, though often you reject certain thoughts about it in favor of others. False beliefs can result in a rigid ego that insists upon using the conscious mind in one direction only, further distorting its perceptions. Often, you quite consciously decide to bury a thought or an idea that might cause you to alter your behavior, because it does not seem to fit in with limiting ideas that you already hold. Listen to your own train of thoughts as you go about your days. What suggestions and ideas are you giving yourself? Realize that these will be materialized in your personal experience. Many quite limiting ideas will pass without scrutiny under the guise of goodness. You may feel quite virtuous, for example, in hating evil, or what seems to you to be evil. But if you find yourself concentrating upon either hatred or evil, you are creating it. If you are poor, you may feel quite self-righteous in your financial condition, looking with scorn upon those who are wealthy, telling yourself that money is wrong, and so reinforcing the condition of poverty. If you are ill, you may find yourself dwelling upon the misery of your condition, and bitterly envying those who are healthy, bemoaning your state, and therefore perpetuating it through your thoughts. If you dwell upon limitations, then you will meet them. You must create a new picture in your mind. It will differ from the picture your physical senses may show you at any given time, precisely in those areas where changes are required. Hatred of war will not bring peace. Another example. Only love of peace will bring about those conditions. You may take a break or end the session as you prefer. Rob, then we'll call it a night. 11:56 p.m. Jane was out of an excellent trance before I finished writing. She didn't remember any of the material. "My God, Rob, it's almost midnight," she exclaimed. Actually, she could have continued the session. She's been extremely active psychically lately. But I wondered about her being tired tomorrow. She has ESP class tomorrow night, a session Wednesday night, and a writing class on Thursday. Session 616, September 20, 1972. The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts, Chapter 2. Seth, good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, now we will resume dictation. I quite realize that many of my statements will contradict the beliefs of those of you who accept the idea that the conscious mind is relatively powerless and that the answers to problems lie hidden beneath. Obviously, the conscious mind is a phenomenon, not a thing. It is ever-changing. It can be concentrated or turned by the ego in literally endless directions. It can view outward reality or turn inward, observing its own contents. There are gradations and fluctuations within its activity. It is far more flexible than you give it credit for. The ego can use the conscious mind almost entirely as a way of perceiving external or internal realities that coincide with its own beliefs. It is not that certain answers do not lie openly accessible, therefore, but that often you have your own self on a course of action in which you believe, and you do not want to open yourself to any material that may contradict your current beliefs. If you are sick, for example, there is a reason. To recover thoroughly without taking on new symptoms, you must discover the reason. You may dislike your illness, but it is a course you have decided upon. While you are convinced that the course is necessary, you will keep the symptoms. Now, these may be the result of one specific belief or caused by a complex of beliefs held together. The beliefs, of course, will be accepted by you, not as beliefs, but as reality. Once you understand that you form your own reality, then you must begin to examine these beliefs by letting the conscious mind freely examine its own contents. We will speak about health and illness more specifically later in the book. I would like to make one point here, however, that often psychoanalysis is simply a game of hide and seek, in which you continue to relinquish responsibility for your actions and reality and assign the basic cause to some area of the psyche, hidden in a dark forest of the past. When you give yourself the task of finding this secret, in so doing, you never think of looking for it in the conscious mind, since you are convinced that all deep answers lie far beneath. And moreover, that your consciousness is not only unable to help you, but will often send up camouflages instead. So you play the game. When and if you manage to change your beliefs in that self-deceptive framework, then any suitable forgotten event from the past will be used as a catalyst. One would do as well as another. Rob notes, pause 9:45, one of many. Now rock music began to blare out from one of the apartments below us. I felt the very floor vibrate, but Jane in trance didn't seem to be bothered. Seth, the basic beliefs, however, are always in your conscious mind and the reasons for your behavior. You simply had not examined its contents with the realization that your beliefs were not necessarily reality, but often your conceptions of it. At the same time, in psychoanalysis, you are often programmed to believe that the unconscious being, the source of such dark secrets, cannot be counted upon as any bed of creativity or inspiration, and so you are denied the help that the inner portions of the self could give to your consciousness. Usually, when you do examine your conscious mind, you do so looking through or with your own structured beliefs. The knowledge that your beliefs are not necessarily reality will allow you to be aware of all the data that is consciously available to you. I'm not telling you to examine your thoughts so frequently and with such vigor that you get in your own way, but you are not fully conscious unless you are aware of the contents of your conscious mind. I am also emphasizing the fact that the conscious mind is equipped to receive information from the inner self as well as the exterior universe. I am not telling you to inhibit thoughts or feelings. I am asking that you become aware of those you have. Realize that they form your reality. Concentrate upon those that give you the results that you want. If you find all of this difficult, you can also examine your physical reality in all of its aspects. Realize that your physical experience and environment is the materialization of your beliefs. You can find great exuberance, health, effective work, abundance, smiles on the faces of those you meet, then take it for granted that your beliefs are beneficial. If you see a world that is good, people that like you, take it for granted again that your beliefs are beneficial. But if you find poor health, a lack of meaningful work, a lack of abundance, a world of sorrow and evil, then assume that your beliefs are faulty and begin examining them. We will later discuss the nature of mass reality, but for now we are dwelling upon the personal aspects. The main point I wanted to make in this chapter was that your conscious beliefs are extremely important, and that you are not at the mercy of events or causes that dwell far beneath your awareness. That is the end of the chapter. You may take a break. Rob, thank you. Very good. There were several developments during break, and I'll try to discuss them in order before we get into chapter 3. To begin with, Jane left her excellent trance easily, saying she had barely heard the music. It still boomed up from below us, but she wasn't interested in that. Instead, she talked about feeling sort of funny, without being able to elaborate. While we had a quick snack, I asked her if she thought the recent strange behavior of our cat, Willie, could stem from his reactions to our own psychic states. She'd seen this happen before, although not recently. Early this month, Willie had picked up a case of fleas that was stubbornly resisting treatment. He'd taken to staying outside all night as well as most of the day. He was also losing weight. Our other cat, Rooney, had always seemed to be immune to us in such matters, and even now was conducting himself in his usual leisurely fashion. Willie was outside now, in a light rain that had begun a couple of hours ago. At supper time, he'd actually seemed to feel that the inside of the house was forbidden territory and had refused to come in. Now I went down the back stairs and called for him as I circled the house. No Willie. I met Jane in the front hall. Here the music was even louder, thundering out from the first floor apartment. Once we were back upstairs in our living room, the music led me to talk about peer groups involving young people. We like rock and often dance to it. It's alive and vital. I also believe that Jane uses its energy when we hear it in the house during sessions. I commented upon the value many youths obviously place upon conforming in their nonconformity. Jane described her own similar intense concerns in high school and college. I had eventually chosen not to be much influenced by those factors, though I'd always been somewhat of a loner. I asked that Seth comment upon Willie's behavior, if he cared to, after dictation. Then Jane said, I knew I was feeling funny tonight. Now I get it. It's like I've got three channels from Seth going at once. I've even got directions. She pointed off to her upper right as she sat in her rocker. Seth comes through on his book from here, on this channel. Next, she indicated her lower right. Then over here, immediately available, is Seth on you and me and Willie. And also on the portrait you asked me about the other day, the one you just finished. Over here now, Jane said, designating her upper left, is Seth on what you were just saying about peer groups, how young people feel it's so important to fit in with their own kind and why I felt that way, but you didn't. Hey, I've even got a bunch of history about that, all ready to deliver, a lot of material on each idea. I was really confused for a while, yet now I see that each thing's separate, already prepared by Seth. You're not going to get two sentences about one subject, then switch to another one. Jane laughed. Which channel do you want? I'm keeping my mouth shut, I said, joking. How about going back to the book? I thought doing that would help her control the proliferation of channels until we could learn more about the development. The possibility had been indicated often. Witness Seth's ability to discuss a variety of subjects with the members of a group, even if they were strangers to Jane. The new step in her abilities would be her conscious awareness of the blocks of material already prepared and awaiting delivery. Jane promptly agreed to resume book work. "I've never felt just this way before, like I've been programmed in advance. It's as though I need 3 voice boxes. That's really weird. I do get it as sound, though. If I could talk 3 times at once, I could deliver finished material on those 3 things. Now I have to pick the right channel to get Seth back on his book." And it almost seems that if someone else came here now and mentioned a subject, I'd have that information already too. Each channel is as clear as a bell. There's no static or bleed through between them. There, now, I've just got another one. Jane pointed to her lower left, and it explains all of this. She laughed again. Just call me Station Jane.